You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. A very busy day of news. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. There is a case challenging gay marriage that was filed in the Supreme Court today. We've got a new congressional candidate from the Democratic side challenging Brian Steele in the 1st Congressional District. And breaking news just within the last hour, Texas Legislative House Democrats who have deprived the Texas House of a quorum to institute mid-decade redistricting are apparently returning to Austin and the Capitol after the current House session expired on Tuesday, today. We've got a congresswoman to discuss what is going on in Texas, as well as the gerrymandering problem writ large. It is none other than Wisconsin Congresswoman Gwen Moore. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. It's hey, great Maggie. To have you.
Good to be with you, as always. And it's always, there's always something wrong.
Something going on for us to talk about here. What, first of all, we will get to the merits of a mid-decade redistricting and what a race to the bottom this represents. What do you make of the Texas House Dems returning to Austin?
Well, I'm really not quite sure. It may simply be that they have recognized that the governor can only call a special session every 30 days. Maybe they're buying time, maybe they are, or maybe they are considering the reality that the governor has the power to call these special sessions every 30 days. And the determination that they're going to bend the knee to Donald Trump and to the House Republican majority at this point, it realizes that they probably cannot hold on to the majority without this racist map that they are going to pass.
Yeah, this is truly extraordinary. To your point, Congresswoman, the Texas House Speaker Dustin Burroughs said that assuming there is still no quorum on Friday, the current special session will end. I need to correct my introductory comments. The current special session will end and the governor will convene a new one. Again, they're just rolling special sessions back to back. Hours later, again, earlier today, this is still today, the Senate, the Texas Senate, state Senate actually passed their new mid-decade proposed map that benefits Republicans. They're doing this to try to ensure that Donald Trump can maintain a majority in the U.S. House of Representatives ahead of the 2026 midterm. Congresswoman, here's what I'm concerned about. It seems to me that what we now have is a race to the bottom to effectively have elected officials pick their voters. Governor Newsom in California sent a letter to the president, to the administration, and to Governor Abbott saying, stop doing this. This is not how this is supposed to work. This is cheating. And if you're going to cheat, we in California will cheat and eliminate the Republicans from the California congressional district. This is not the way it was meant to be. What are we looking at? Are we looking into the great abyss where it is simply a race to the bottom where legislators are now picking their voters and not the other way around?
Maggie, you know, this is really illustrative of why the Voting Rights Act was so needed. To really protect everyone's rights. It wasn't just to enfranchise Black people, which it did the first time in 1965, but it made sure that communities, that people could elect anybody, it didn't matter what color they were, but that there were voters who were minorities, their rights were protected so that they could choose representatives of their choice. This map clearly, I wish I could find the data and statistics and all this paper I've got sitting on my lap, but I feel comfortable saying that out of, I believe that there are like 38 congressional seats in Texas, 25 of them are already held by Republicans, and they want 5 more seats. So they want to hold 30 out of the 38. And the people of color represent over 60% of the population in Texas, if I'm not incorrect, it might be off. But that, I think that I'm in the ballpark, that the majority of Texans, but yet white people will be representing, you know, like 2/3 of all of the districts. If they get their way, you know, they'll have 30 seats out of the 38, most of them occupied by white people. And what they do is that they pack Black people so that historic districts like the one that most recently was held by Sheila Jackson Lee and then Sylvester Turner, that seat being vacant, merging that perhaps with the other seat in Houston, Al Green, pitting those two seats, and that reduces representation, that kind of packing. And so perhaps they have returned. And yes, we have heard California, New York. I think California drew a map, you know, and maybe it was just to demonstrate that he could literally turn all, 54 seats in California into Democratic seats with ridiculous maps that don't respect community of interest, natural boundaries,
contiguity, compactness, all of the things.
just the free for all. And so this is really the threat of losing our democracy. You know, I mean, as Democrats, we were criticized for just talking abstractly about democracy. But let the lesson begin. I mean, this is one of them.
Yeah, I'm deeply concerned about this, and it is coming after a decade plus of the U.S. Supreme Court weakening legal checks, not just under the Voting Rights Act, right? You had states that were required to do reporting and to get pre-approval from the Department of Justice before they changed their voting laws because of their historical, specific, well-documented, indisputable discrimination against Black and brown people in this country, trying to deprive Black and brown people of their constitutionally guaranteed right to vote. It's not only that, but the Supreme Court's slow and steady move to basically not give a whit if people aren't actually selecting their elected officials, specifically racial gerrymandering. This court has, and the Supreme Court over the last 15 years has so weakened those protections. And what you see when you look at the numbers that are at play in Texas, the folks that will be losing their congressional seats are Black representatives representing Black and brown communities. So anybody that tries to say that there is not an explicitly both partisan but additionally racial element to this is simply not looking at the facts. To me, what comes next? I do not understand how we are supposed to persist in telling voters and telling them that their votes matter if we're going to engage in a race to the bottom, anything goes, gerrymandering, chicken. I mean, it's like it's a democratic game of chicken. I don't know how else to say that. Congresswoman Moore, what do you think about Governor Newsom and Governor Hochul in New York saying, hey, if you do this and you go forward with it, Texas, we're going to be forced to do the same? Do you think Democrats should engage in this race to the bottom?
Well, we're going to see, because I believe that Texas is going to pass this map. Unless there's some intervention by the courts and lawsuit, it may lead to a race to the bottom, because I think that one of the criticisms that our constituents, I mean, our Democratic voters have of us is that we're ethical. We try to follow the rules, follow the rule of law, it's a bad thing. I mean,
and to your point, Congresswoman, I have heard from more Democrats in the past 10 years about independent citizen-led redistricting committees and the push to have independent redistricting committees on a statewide basis in local jurisdictions to draw maps in a way that it actually increases competition between candidates so that candidates that are eventually elected are responsive to their voters. I think what Republicans and conservatives of good faith are missing here, Congresswoman, is that when you go down this road, your elected official stops taking your call because they don't need your vote anymore. And that won't serve a conservative or a Republican well, even if they have their preferred candidate as their elected representative in Congress, because that congressperson, they get to pick their voters and they know they're getting those votes and they're not accountable anymore. It's not good for Republicans either. And it's certainly not good for democracy.
Well, that is very well said. And, you know, with regard to the commissions, nonpartisan commissions, I mean, there's an argument that can be made. There'd be no such thing as a totally nonpartisan commission. Who would appoint who? But at the same time, if we had a legal framework, the Supreme Court has basically said partisan gerrymandering is just okay. But I don't think racial gerrymandering is okay. And if the Supreme Court would put his foot down, where is Chief Justice Roberts right now to say, he could put a stop to this Texas thing. And probably and hopefully, as Democrats, we will fight this man and try to get it to the Supreme Court. We need the Voting Rights Act like never, ever before.
And the reality is here, I hear a lot of whataboutism from the right about gerrymandering. The facts and the historical indisputable record on this simply do not bear that out. Those are lies and damn lies. Democrats have not gerrymandered to the degree and to the extent that Republicans have. And let's be very clear together, Congresswoman, that this is Texas trying to deprive Texas voters of their selected representatives by cheating. Texas did this first. Republicans did this first. And this increased or escalation of the gerrymandering race to the bottom. And it has been largely Democrats who have been advocating for fairer maps and independent redistricting committees. Don't go anywhere. Congresswoman Gwen Moore sticks around. We're going to discuss Milwaukee flooding, FEMA, and so much more when we come back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay with us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. We've got a guest extraordinaire here this afternoon on the Maggie Dawn Show. It is Congresswoman Gwen Moore, and coming up at the bottom of the hour, I'll be joined by Dan Schaefer. We'll be talking about the Democrat who announced he is also running in the first congressional district against Brian Steil. Don't go anywhere. We've got that breaking news of the day coming up shortly. But Congresswoman Moore, let me ask you, we've had absolutely horrendous flooding across southeastern Wisconsin, got more rain yesterday, exacerbating matters. We heard from Milwaukee Fire Chief Lipsky yesterday talking about their emergency response. What have you been hearing from your constituents in the wake of this natural disaster, I'll call it?
Well, there are people who have been able to manage the flooding in their basement with 2 or 3 inches. Everything from that to people having their cars ruined in the storm. I want to make sure that everybody is going to stay safe. And of course, I'm working with officials to make sure that we get this place designated as has experienced in a natural disaster so that we can help the community recover and help individuals recover too. I really want to encourage people who have had property. I've seen pictures of, you know, just precious treasures piled out on the sidewalk, in yards, that people should really go to milwaukee.city.gov and then go to the 211 disaster page and submit your information about your losses. You know, there's no reason. I mean, there, you know, I know some memories can never be replaced, but there, you know, if your basement was ruined, there ought to be some help up for you. As a matter of fact, my colleague, Rashida Tlaib, has a bill that she's circulating right now to help people in this region of the country who have basements to get relief when it's flooding. I think what people don't know is that flood insurance, I think, is a separate package from regular insurance.
Homeowner's insurance, yep.
Yeah, and so there might be a lot of people sort of left in the lurch. Not to mention the mold and mildew that could come afterwards.
And that remediation, which is incredibly expensive, and you know, people can have electrical problems. Folks, we're going to be actually joined a little bit later this week, I believe it's on Thursday, by Wisconsin's Commissioner of Insurance to talk to folks and share with them, Congresswoman, about flood insurance and where to look in your current homeowner's policy to see if you have coverage for certain elements of damage to your home. We're going to talk about renters' flood insurance with the commissioner as well. This is an area where, you look to the coasts, and it is becoming harder and harder for people to buy the sort of insurances that are needed for the particular natural disaster risk that they have, whether that's hurricanes or fires. This is going to be a continuing problem. Congresswoman, when we look at Donald Trump's cuts to FEMA, when we look at Donald Trump's cuts to NOAA, to the National Weather Service, we look at Donald Trump's removal of the EPA's authority to regulate fossil fuel emissions and fossil fuels, and the denial of climate science. What do you want people to know? What should people be doing to help get government to actually care again about public safety and health?
Well, you know, people always ask me, Maggie, you know, Congresswoman, they ask me, what are you doing? Well, what are you doing? You know, I was this past weekend with a group of very intelligent, very sophisticated, educated people who wanted to know, what are you doing? I mean, that's just the thing. This is that our democracy is really at risk. I mean, this denial of reality poses an existential threat to all of us. I mean, this flooding, this is supposed to be a 1,000-year event. You know, not so much. It's regular because of climate change and our inaction toward it. And the undermining of this, you know, all of the protections taken away from FEMA, all of this is to vindicate the president's comment that climate change is not a major factor in our country's destiny, future, or present condition. And it's, you know, we're being led by, okay, can I say it, like a narcissistic person, and we gotta stay in the street.
Yeah,
Maggie. We gotta stay. We got, you know, when I was 16, I was marching, and every day there was some sort of protest. I'm ready to bring that back on.
Yes. You know, I mean, we got to take it and take it to the streets and keep it there.
We got to keep it. We got to keep educating people. We got to bring everybody along. I mean, we, the people, we're the only things that can stop this.
Folks, that is the unsinkable, unforgettable Congresswoman Gwen Moore one of our incredible congresspersons on the Democratic side from the state of Wisconsin, fighting the good fight for each and every one of us. I look forward to my next conversation with you, Congresswoman. Please stay safe and stay dry. My best to all of your constituents recovering from the floods. Don't go anywhere, folks. We got a brand new Democratic candidate throwing their hat into the Democratic primary field for the first congressional district. Dan Schaefer joins me next to discuss. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. And welcome if you're just joining us. This is the Civic Media Radio Network, and I'm your host, Maggie Dawn. We've got some local and statewide news that has been breaking this week. Let's start in the political and election realm. I'm joined for this next segment by Civic Media's political editor, Dan Schaefer. We've got a new Democratic entrant into the primary field in the 1st Congressional District who threw their hat in the ring today to run against potentially Brian Steele. And what's their background, Dan? Tell us about the candidate.
Yeah, so we have a new candidate jumping into the mix for the 1st Congressional District. His name is Mitchell Berman. He announced that he is a political newcomer. He has not run for office at any level before, but he is a emergency nurse who has worked at the VA for quite some time. And, you know, he's really touting his experience there in, you know, essentially public service, working with families at the VA, and is looking to take on Brian Steele in what has been a fairly difficult district for Democrats in the past few election cycles. Now, he's not the first candidate to throw his hat into the ring here. Randy Bryce, who you may remember is a candidate who went viral running against the Iron Stash, who ran against Paul Ryan a number of years ago. He announced a candidacy several months ago, but his candidacy really has not picked up any kind of steam. His fundraising was very, very low per the last report. And so it seemed like, you know, we're headed towards a situation where we're going to see another candidate jump in. And now we have Mitchell Berman taking the plunge.
Yeah, I love candidates like Mr. Berman. Admittedly, in the interest of full transparency, I don't know the guy more than reading the press release and his background. But to me, this is the kind of candidate the Democrats should be looking out, nurturing, fostering, and getting out there. People that actually remind folks of their neighbors and their coworkers, you know, that are regular folks that speak like regular folks do, right? And actually work for a living as opposed to the carpet-bagging billionaire set that apparently seems to be the preferred candidate type of Republicans here in the state of Wisconsin. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Tony Weed, Tim Michaels, Eric Hovde, et cetera, et cetera. Why has Randy Bryce's candidacy not caught on? Why was it nearly a certitude that there would be another Democratic primary candidate?
Yeah, it just didn't seem like it ever was ever going to gain any steam. And just once the fundraising report came out, I want to say it was like $25,000, which for this kind of report is not what you want to see. So once we saw that, it was like, all right, somebody else is obviously going to get in to this race. And I will say that Brian Steele has been a pretty formidable candidate in this district. You know, he won by a nearly 10-point margin last year in the November 2024 election, and he outran the top of the ticket pretty significantly. So he won by about a 10-point margin. Donald Trump won that district by about a 4-point margin. Eric Hovde by about a 3-point margin. So Steele's performance there was pretty strong, especially since the DCCC was putting money into that race to back the Democratic candidate Peter Barca, who frankly, I don't think he ran a terrific campaign. And so it turned out that Steele won that one pretty significantly. And Steele has typically outrun the top of the ticket in the first congressional. He also did that in 2022 when he won by 9. Ron Johnson won that district by 4 points at the time. It was pretty close to a dead heat between Tony Evers and Tim Michaels. So, you know, there is a chance for this district to be flipped. But still, at the same time, the last time a Democrat has won that district through a statewide race was Barack Obama in 2008. And it's tough to compare a whole lot of statewide results to Barack Obama in 2008.
Yeah, Peter Barker was the last candidate in the last cycle in the first CD. I have always thought Mr. Barker is one of those sort of centrist, very likable, approachable, normal sorts of candidates that I think can have appeal. Here, I think the fact that Mr. Berman is new to politics, has not won an elected office before, but has been active locally. He actually filed suit in Racine County Court over an open meetings violation by the school district in Raymond, which I thought, like, someone actually understanding how open meetings laws work and filing suit, and that Raymond school board eventually admitted, yep, that was an open meetings violation. Good on Mr. Berman, because transparency is how we get to accountability in government. Quite interesting. Speaking of candidates, Dan, I wanted to get your take on Kelda Roy is basically telling Todd Alba this afternoon she's running for governor. I wasn't surprised at all, were you, Dan?
Yeah, you know, making some news on civic media. We love to see it. Any candidate who is looking to make some news on civic media, we'd love to have you. But yeah, I thought it was very interesting. Again, not particularly surprising. Her name has been on the short list of potential candidates for quite some time. Obviously, she ran in 2018. And I think she's had a pretty compelling run as state senator representing Madison. I believe she was elected in 2020 and reelected last year as well. But she has been on the Joint Finance Committee. And so it's one thing to, you know, take a run and, you know, just maybe kind of be in the wilderness in the years in between. But she's been doing the work and she's been doing some really strong work on the Joint Finance Committee. She's been a regular on the Todd Alba Show, joining and talking about budget updates over the last few months. And I think she would be on the short list of the formidable candidates. So, you know, Sarah Rodriguez jumped in, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley is going to jump in as well. No surprise to see Kelda Roy throw her name into the ring too.
You know, it all begs the question to me about how do Democrats from traditionally blue areas of the state bring independents and swing voters to the polls? How do they craft a message that isn't just speaking to the true blue believers, right, the progressives within the party, but really does speak to small business owners and working folks of all backgrounds across the state? That's really the challenge, whether you're talking about Kelda Roy's or that other maybe candidate from the far progressive left, Chris Larson, out of Milwaukee, also a state senator. So watch this space, folks. Also making news late yesterday was the veto by Governor Tony Evers on a bill that had been creeping along that many, including the national organization Common Cause, which is a nonpartisan government watchdog organization, said was basically a poll tax. Tell us about it, Dan.
Yeah, Common Cause released a statement about this, essentially applauding Tony Evers for vetoing what they called hyperpartisan legislation, and saying that it would have prevented people with felony convictions from regaining their constitutional right to vote until they have paid all fines, costs, fees, surcharges, and restitution. Saying that it amounts to a modern-day poll tax. I think there's, you know, a lot of really important conversations to be had about, like, regaining voting rights for people who have served their time, and having the opportunity to regain that right after leaving prison. And so I think this is a really smart veto by Governor Evers and one that is certainly needed, and to react to some of the most more outlandish things to keep people to deny people their right to vote.
Yeah, this is an area that I think deserves much more discussion and exploration. Lots of folks will talk about the justice system, specifically the criminal justice system. Very few people have actually spoken with someone who is incarcerated, unless you happen to know someone in your circle of friends or family who has been incarcerated or is presently incarcerated, to actually talk with them about how confinement in this country works. And the fact of the matter is that over the last 20 years, we have basically created a private prison industry in this country that has been incredibly lucrative. And there seems to be no end in sight. And whether you're talking about, you know, pardoning 1,500 violent January 6 protesters or actually taking a meaningful look at nonviolent low-level drug offenders, you know, there needs to be deep conversations had about whether or not this is actually increasing the safety in our neighborhoods. And one of the things that I think is so important is to think very critically and not in a knee-jerk way about when is it appropriate for someone to regain their franchise, their right to vote. And in some countries and in some states, even when you're incarcerated, you still get to vote if you're a citizen. I think there's some really interesting questions about democracy and who loses the right to vote and who doesn't and how do you regain it. It's almost impossible in the state of Florida after you've been convicted of a crime to ever get your right to vote back. Republicans here, again, I call this a poll tax. Oh, it means that rich criminals, they get to vote. But if you don't have any money, yeah, you don't get to vote. It just, those things should not be how we're deciding whether or not folks get to vote or not.
Yeah, and as Common Cause notes in their release here, the state does not have a centralized database tracking the amount of an individual's financial obligation that must be met for reenfranchisement. So not only is this bill misguided on its merits, it's misguided in practicality because there's no way to actually track if people were to, you know, pay what they owe in order to regain their voting rights.
Conservative Bob on the text line saying that felons don't have rights while in prison. They shouldn't get to vote. You can take the position, Conservative Bob, that folks that are incarcerated for crimes, question Bob, all crimes don't get to vote. But it is absolutely untrue that folks that are incarcerated or convicted of felonies don't have rights. Trust me, I know. I litigated lots of prisoner litigation based on our fundamental civil rights as enshrined in the Constitution. Very briefly with about 2-ish minutes left here, Dan. You've been going around the community here in southeastern Wisconsin looking at some of the flood damage and some of the continuing emergency remediation. What's our communities looking like here in southeastern Wisconsin 2 days after the big flood?
Yeah, I was spent some time in Germantown today where there was a neighborhood, a subdivision where people were encouraged to evacuate because of the rising flood waters in that community there. So there are a number of people who I think they had been put up at the Super 8 Motel there. It was an area kind of like right off the highway, just west of I-41, right at County Line Road there. So there were a number of, you know, just kind of chain restaurants that you would typically see open that time of day, busy that time of day, that were closed and had standing floodwaters in front of, you know, Panda Express and Burger King and Taco Bell there. And they had a fire engine that was actually blasting water down the street to get it closer to, you know, make its way back to the rivers and streams and take it out to the lake and all of that. So quite the scene, seeing water completely go across four lanes of traffic on a busy road.
Yeah, this is going to take some time and is likely going to be in the billions, likely in damage. Again, it ain't a 1,000-year flood. That's based on the old data, folks. It is a much more frequent occurrence, unfortunately. The question is, what are we going to do about it to help keep your family and mine safe? Thanks to you very much. That's Dan Schaefer, political editor here at the Civic Media Radio Network. When I come back, I'm going to share a little bright spot in the news. Did you know that one of our nation's oldest black churches owns the Proud Boys copyright and logo, and they're suing them over it? Ho-ho! That's coming up next. I'm going to share a little bright spot in today's news. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. You're going to want to stick around for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. He's coming up next. And if you are Brewers obsessed these days, the miracle in Milwaukee, they just keep happening. there were about five plays yesterday in the Brewers face-off against the Pittsburgh Pirates that I was like, I can't believe that just happened. Again, the miracle in Milwaukee, if you want to continue to track those amazing Brewers, we've got you covered here on Civic Media. We've got Brewers coverage off WRCE in Richland Center, WISS in Oshkosh, WRJN in Racine and Kenosha, and WCQM in Park Falls. And don't forget, Civic Media's newest Brewers affiliate, WBZH 96.9 FM and 910 AM in Hayward. Hello, Hayward. I know you love the Brewers just as much as I do. Folks, I promised some good news this afternoon. I don't know if it's good news. It's at least not utterly, completely depressing news, and it's certainly interesting. And I didn't know the backdrop of any of this, which is that the historic Metropolitan African Methodist Episcopal Church, which is one of the oldest AME Black churches in the country, actually owns, which is, this is bananas, owns the Proud Boys logo and its trademark. Okay. And the AME Church out of Washington, D.C. just filed a lawsuit against the Proud Boys for the Proud Boys' use of what used to be the Proud Boys logo and trademark. They filed this suit in the Southern District of New York yesterday against the Hudson Valley Proud Boys chapter, its president William Pepe, and 100 John Does, claiming trademark infringement. This is the latest in a five-year legal battle between the church and the white nationalist group, the Proud Boys. It came about back in 2020 at a pro-Trump rally. In December of that year, the Proud Boys destroyed property of the church, along with another historically Black church, during a very violent night in the city. Again, why they would do that and target historically Black churches, I'll leave you to extrapolate the reasoning behind that from the Proud Boys. And in 2023, as a result of that violence by the Proud Boys directed at two historically Black churches in D.C., a judge awarded the church $2.8 million in damages and condemned the Proud Boys' quote, hateful and overtly racist conduct. Well, the Proud Boys paid a whopping $1,500 of that $2.8 million damages award. And because they only paid that amount, the court gave the church the use of the group's name and symbols. How do you like dem apples, huh? I thought that was pretty interesting. And the court ruled that the church could seize money the Proud Boys made through merchandise sales using those logos. And what's even better here is that the Metropolitan AME out of Washington, D.C. actually started using the Proud Boys logo. It's that, like, it's a black field with like a gold or yellowish kind of crown, the crown or sort of like the wreaths that they put on horses when they win races. Kind of looks like that with a big PB on it. Well, the church actually started using that and put the lines on it, stay proud and stay Black. I love this. This is cracking me up. In the recent New York lawsuit, again, filed just this past week by the AME church out of D.C., they sent a cease and desist letter to Pepe, demanded that they stop using the name and the logo. And again, they didn't stop using it. And they didn't stop selling merch with it. So the historic Metropolitan African Methodist Episcopal Church in D.C. has sued the Proud Boys. I love it. By the way, Enrique Tarrio, this is the guy that led the Proud Boys, he has a deep and reverential respect for the law. No, that is sarcasm, of course, folks. in reference to the specific court order in that case where the AME church sued the Proud Boys for destroying their property. This is what Tario had to say. I hold in contempt any motions, judgments, or orders issued against me. I wipe my patootie, but he used a different word for it. I wipe my blank with it. That's Enrique Tario showing deep reverential respect for law and order, and that's why Donald Trump pardoned him. And here we go again, folks. Absolutely unbelievable. We've got a great show for you all tomorrow. I'm going to kick off the discussion tomorrow by interviewing Ruth Conniff. She's the editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Examiner. We are going to be talking about gerrymandering and the race to the bottom. What is even going on? Since when should it be the case that legislators pick their voters? But it seems that that's where we're all headed. We'll get you to weigh in as well. What do you think? Should Democrats fight fire with fire? Don't miss that spicy conversation with Ruth and each and every one of you. That's tomorrow starting at 4 o'clock. That's going to do it for me today. Thanks so much for sticking around with me. I appreciate you. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.